for the winner by split decision.
It's time for your number one source for mixed martial arts. Mixed martial
arts. Oh, Jesus.
It is over.
Wow.
Breaking down the week's news and results. The authority for combat sports.
Want to take a chance and risk getting knocked out?
Oh, my God! Wow! Wow!
It is all over!
This is the split decision.
Can he get it here, Mike Nichols?
Right,
and
right,
the Irene! Oh, my God! He's done it!
We made it.
We did.
Episode number two.
Episode number two.
Yes. Are you excited?
I am. I am actually very excited for
now
this episode.
Now you're a part of a reoccurring podcast.
I am. I feel like we've already kind of hit our peak of success.
Yes.
What do we have? 227 downloads?
Yes.
Or plays? What's the difference?
Same thing.
It's the same thing.
Yes. And that was we had 100 within 24 hours.
Jesus, man.
Pretty cool, right?
I feel like we're going to get picked up by a major network.
Oh, just, yeah.
It's a matter of time.
Yeah. UFC Fight Pass, they need a radio podcast.
They do. You know? They need some assholes to get on there
and
talk.
Exactly. So for the new listeners, I am T-Mac.
I'm Turner.
And what we do here is we talk about MMA, the great sport of MMA.
Or we try to.
We try.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. We don't make this like a radio, like, okay, headlines. Yeah. It's just a conversation.
Yeah. And very non-conventional.
Right.
And so we're going for, at least.
We're going in for a... Here's a conversation. Why don't you join in and listen?
Yeah, let's talk.
Yeah. You can't talk to us.
No.
Because it's pre-recorded.
Right. Yeah.
But.
Yeah. Or I guess you could talk to us. We're probably not going to respond.
Nope. Hey, actually, if you, I set this up. If you want to interact with us, send a email to thesplitdecision@yahoo.com.
Oh, wow. Look, we're actually going to do it.
Right.
Oh,
I mean,
wow.
If you want. I mean,
man,
we'll see how that goes.
Our email is going to be huge. I can't wait. That's when you've made it.
That is when you made it.
Where people take the time to draft an email and send it to us.
We're going to read it. Like, do you ever listen to Jim Rome's show?
Oh, absolutely.
And he, like, Dear Rome. And he, like, takes 15 minutes to read one email.
Yeah.
That's what, yeah.
We're going to have to do that because we'll probably only get one email.
Yeah.
So we're going to have to take 15
minutes.
Hey,
you know, one, four, whatever. That's... On the other show I do, we usually get about five.
Really?
And we take two segments to do it.
No kidding.
Yeah. Takes us about 20
minutes.
You guys
are getting five emails.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we are.
You guys are. Spanish announce table's taking off.
We are.
That's T-Mac's other podcast. You guys should listen to that as well.
If you're into pro wrestling, yes, that's the other passion of mine outside of MMA, is the good old pro wrestling.
We're trying to get to the level of Spanish announce table. That's our goal.
That is our goal.
That's
consistency first.
Well, yeah. Only our second.
Second
I keep forgetting it's only our second show because we've really been doing this for a long time.
Yeah.
We just haven't been recording it.
That's very true.
So.
Very true. So, last night, UFC 170.
Amazing fights.
I thought so, too. And I told you this off air. There was people that actually said it was boring, and I don't understand that, at all.
I don't know how. Was there one decision on the main card? Was that?
No, because Wonderboy won.
Wonderboy had a knockout.
Knockout. TKO. And then Mike Pyle won with just vicious ground and pound.
Those elbows were nasty.
Roy McDonald.
Okay, so that was the only decision.
And that was still, that was great. And then Daniel Cormier took
was awesome.
Cummings' lunch money. And then Honda Housley.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, other than the Rory McDonald, Damian Maia, which was fight of the night.
Yeah, which was amazing. The craziness in that fight was the difference between the first round and then the rest of the fight.
Yeah.
You know, it almost looked like Damian was going to cruise to a Damian Maia-esque victory.
Well, when Damian has you mounted, 95% of the fighters in the world don't last another minute.
He couldn't. Man, Rory was – he was in a bad way right there. But he's a – obviously showed he's a fantastic grappler and got out of a bad spot and didn't let the round get to him. And I think that was the most impressive part for me watching Rory, because I was reading online this week about how people were saying you never know which Rory's going to come out. Is it going to be the conservative Rory who's just fighting to win against Ellenberger type?
Yeah.
Or is it going to be the Rory that we saw last night who, up until the last bell, was looking for that finish? I mean, he was throwing heat.
And he even sounded like it in his post-fight interview. You know, he was like, I'm here to kick ass and I'm a killer.
I wonder if it took GS – I wonder if he ever thought, no matter – you know, if he truly never thought he would fight GSP, mm-hmm. if he, you know, once GSP left, did he get the fire back of thinking like, wow, I can realistically fight for the title
I can be a champion
win.
Now.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he was a different deal last night.
Yeah, he was insane. And I think maybe an ass kicking that first round did kind of fire him up too,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
When you go in there preparing for 6 to 8 weeks or however long you prepared, and then within the first 2 minutes, you got Damian Maia looking for what type of submission he knows and getting pounded in the face.
Yeah, you're tangled up in the Damian Maia spider web.
Right, then you're going, well fuck this guy. Yeah. I'm going to kick his ass now. And, you know.
His stand-up looked awesome, and I don't know at what point Damian Maia, I don't know if that body kick.
I think it was the body
turned
kick.
Turned the tide, but something changed in him, and Rory hit his second gear, and he was we were talking about it last night. We were watching the fights. His straight right hand is just—it's a laser.
Yeah,
I mean it's wild watching him throw his hands and he throws an awesome right kick and he looked good.
It was insane. The thing that makes me think of the like post fight, you know, obviously Rory, I think will get a top contender because he is.
Give him Matt Brown.
Matt Brown would be amazing.
That'd be awesome.
But where does Damian Maia go? Now this is the first time he's lost two fights in his career. You know, he fought Jake Shields.
Right.
Fought Rory McDonald. Those
are
kind of
two fantastic guys.
Right. So where does he go?
You know, I don't know. I think he stays. I think he.
Because he didn't look bad.
Oh, no. And yeah, he, we don't know what happened in between the middle of the second round and the rest of the mm-hmm. fight. I don't know if he was hurt or got hurt or what, you know. But I think he stays in fighting a top 10 guy. People like watching him fight, and he's found a way to become a consistently exciting fighter, even if it is on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that first round was watching him work and watching him work to pass and play the chess match and Rory's guard was awesome. And I think that people are starting to appreciate that, which was a big problem for Damian Maia when he first burst on the scene, even though he was finishing, he was submitting
Chael
guys.
Sonnen,
But, you know, it was like, oh, we got to wait 10 minutes for him to, mm-hmm. you know, it's like he's submitting top guys in the world and everyone's pissed off.
Damn it, why?
Well, they put Damian Maia on the pay-per-view.
Oh, great. We got to watch
his
submission.
Nine submission finishes.
Yeah. You know, I was thinking maybe like the winner of Safadine and Ellenberger. You mentioned Ellenberger. I think that would be a good status to see where he's at. Now, if he loses that one, then damage control.
That's part of being a top 10 guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can lose two fights and still be a top 10 guy. But then it's like, well, this guy's lost two or three fights in a row.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he beats guys handily outside of the top 10. You know, it's I think he's trying to find his spot.
Right.
You know, in the rankings You know, speaking of the rankings, I mean, what did Mike Pyles win for him last night?
Well, but the thing with Mike Pyles that I loved is he was ranked number
15.
15. Why are they ranking outside of the top 10?
They just rank everyone in the division.
Next fight, number 16 versus number 23.
I want to say that's the first time I've ever seen them have a ranking out of the top 10.
It was weird.
Like, I feel like usually you don't even see them rank the number 10 guy.
Yeah.
Like, you're either number 9 or better.
Right.
And all of a sudden, Mike Pyles is number 15 in the division. Like, what's going on?
And he dominated.
Oh, man.
That
fight was so awesome from bell to bell
mm-hmm.
because they were both throwing hard and man, Mike Pyles looked like a killer.
And the scrambles they had.
Scrambles were amazing.
Were great. I mean, it was such high level, you know, I'm moving left, well, I move right, and I'm moving right to grab your ankle, and all this complex stuff.
And Waldeberger's grappling is crazy, and Mike Pyles had an answer for everything at every turn, you know, and there was, you know, some good takedowns. He had that trip. Mike Pyles had that trip that was
awesome in the first round.
And a lot of really good grappling exchanges, and they were both thrown hard on the feet, which was awesome. So that was my favorite fight to watch.
And the pace they had.
Oh, ridiculous.
Oh, my God.
Ridiculous.
I mean, that was, you know, everyone always speaks about, like, Cain Velasquez's pace.
Yeah, and his cardio.
And his cardio and stuff. Man, those guys, I know that was a lighter weight class, but still, they were going at it.
15 minutes straight.
And every single punch and scramble and kick was just 100%, and it was really impressive. Mike Pyles, one of those guys where, you know, it seems like he has all the potential in the world. Maybe, though, his age, it's almost like a Randy Couture where it's like now he's hitting his peak.
Right.
But how many more years does he have left, you know?
Yeah, and I think, I mean, Mike Pyles is a guy who I think is still finding ways to get better. Mm-hmm. You know, he the Matt Brown fight was a big setback for him. Mm-hmm. I think he was on that pretty good tear fighting some good guys, but
yeah, you know, he had a win over John Hathaway.
Yeah, he's a guy who is going to stay relevant because people like to watch him fight. They like his style.
And they like his haircut.
He loves his haircut. It looks like an older Matt Waters. But, you know, if he can keep competing with, you know, guys outside, a little bit outside the top 10 and maybe guys in the top 10, mm-hmm. he's always going to be around until, yeah, you're right, he gets to the Randy Couture, you know, BJ Penn age where it's like, okay, man, you know, you've done enough. Yeah, you've done enough for the sport.
It's time to stay as the head coach of whatever gym he's at. Right. I think he's still at Extreme Couture, correct?
They were talking last night he opened up his own shop.
Yeah.
I can't think of what it's called, but he's been a integral part of Las Vegas MMA coaching wise for a really long time, and guys love him.
Yeah, and another guy that I love that he's quickly becoming my favorite fighter at 205, and he's only had one fight.
Oh, you're going
to go here? Daniel Cormier.
Wow.
Yes. Cormier.
He went Cormier with it.
Yeah. Well, here's the reason why I'm such a huge Cormier fan is because he did the Stone Cold Steve Austin podcast, and he impressed me with his pro wrestling knowledge. Any fighter that impresses me with pro wrestling knowledge, I'm automatically going to be a fan of. And with Cormier, he is running through everyone.
Yeah.
He hasn't had, to me, a tough fight. I mean, now, the guys he's fighting are super tough.
Right, yeah.
Bigfoot, Frank Mir. You know, these guys
are... I always thought the who's who.
But it looks so easy for him.
His style is so much different than anybody else out there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think we watched fights with Anthony last night, and he was talking about how Daniel Cormier does so well punching out of the clinch, you know, and he, I think being a smaller heavyweight when he was at heavyweight, getting in those clinches with guys like Bigfoot Silva, that's where he caught Bigfoot Silva coming out of the clinch. You know, he had a collar tie and threw a nasty uppercut, did it last night. And I think he's found that Cain Velasquez-esque style, which is I'm going to come at you for the entire fight, we're going to clinch, we're going to dirty box, you know, all that stuff. And he's obviously making it work for himself.
Yeah.
And he's going to be a problem.
Well, and that's a style that it's starting to become very popular, and it reminds me of Johnny Hendricks, where it's, I'm coming at you, I'm going to throw heavy hand.
Right. And you're not worried about getting hit.
Yeah, not worried about getting hit, and you definitely can't take me down.
He has the same style at light heavyweight and heavyweight that Tim Elliott has at 125, where it's like, I'm gonna run after you, and if you punch me, I'm okay with that. I plan on getting punched, but I'm going to be chasing you, trying to punch you at every corner.
Yeah, and you told me off-air, Pat Cummings, moving on to the second part of that.
Pat Cummings.
Yeah, I got Pat Cummings. He actually gets another fight.
He does, yeah. Dana White said he's going to get...
Are you a fan of that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, listen, like you said, he stepped up and helped the UFC out. I think he deserves another fight for that.
Who does he fight?
Reason.
Who would you have him fight?
Jesus.
Yes.
he is going to probably fight. Give him. Is it Anthony Perosh still in the UFC?
I think so.
Is he a light heavyweight or is he a heavyweight? What are we doing with that guy?
Yeah.
What's that guy doing? Put him. Hey, give him that guy.
Okay.
It's a tough guy.
205 is deep. You know, everyone in there is a killer. I was going to say someone, but unfortunately he just got arrested. I was going to say Thiago Silva, but he won't be fighting anytime soon.
I don't think he's going to be having any sanctioned fights anytime soon.
Yeah, I mean, I would say put him in there with a number 15 guy.
Because we do that now.
Right, yeah.
We have
obviously,
number 15 guys.
Yeah, we have 15 guys. But Cormier, going back to him, I would say he would fight the winner. Personally, if you don't make the Rashad fight, which I still think is an amazing matchup.
That'd be awesome.
If you don't do that, I would put him in there against the winner of Phil Davis, Anthony Johnson.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I think it all depends on, you know, how long he wants off. He wants to turn around quick. I'd like to see him fight the winner of Gustafson Tahuna for number one contender.
I think he deserves that.
I still want to watch Gustafson fight Jones again, you know, and I think if DC comes in and beats him, obviously he's the guy.
But would you be pissed if you're Alexander Gustafson? Like, I came razor close to beating John Jones.
Right.
I probably should get a rematch.
Now I got to get two fights in between.
Now you're making me fight this guy, and then you're going to make me fight Cormier? Yeah. Like, fuck you, man. Yeah.
And he's the guy who I mean, if I was in his position, I wouldn't even have take the tuna fight.
Right.
He was the guy that was just like, yeah, I'll fight him, you know, whatever. But
it's in Sweden, correct? Is that where?
Yeah.
Yeah, and so that's
his
probably
home
country,
why he took it,
and all that stuff.
But yeah, I think that Gustafsson Cormier fight would be awesome. But the Rashad fight is intriguing.
I think the Rashad fight.
Put Rashad against either of those two guys.
Yeah.
And you know, those core four guys right there are the guys who are vying for the title shot. So
do like a tournament like we spoke of last week, you know, kind of a four-man tournament, these two guys.
Even though I wouldn't get crazy excited about a Rashad Bones rematch.
No.
And I don't know why, but even though I think that's a good fight on paper.
I think Jones handled him in that first fight, and I don't think anything's changed except for Rashad's older.
He's
and
older.
Jones is getting better.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, yeah, Jones handled him in that first fight, and it was with the one aspect that they probably never trained, and it was elbows.
Yeah.
You know, like everything was similar, everything was even, and then one big elbow to Rashad's face, and Rashad was like, wait a minute, we didn't do this in practice,
yeah.
Son of a bitch.
I want to see the only, and it's not unanswered, but the one thing I want to see Cormier deal with is a really long guy like a Gustafsson or a Jones,
mm-hmm.
where it's, you know, it's going to be harder to get into that clinch. It's
10 inches
harder,
on him, yeah.
Because Cormier, even at light heavyweight, isn't a tall guy.
No, he's 5'10".
You know, he's not long.
Yeah.
You know, John Jones and Gustafsson, those are long guys. They're going to be able to keep him at distance to some degree. And I think it's interesting to see how, because, I mean, both those guys, Gustafsson, I can't even say his name.
Gustafsson. Alex.
Yeah.
We know him
as
Alex.
I call him Alex. His wrestling gets better every single fight. I mean, we saw that in the John Jones fight. So I think both those fights are cool for Cormier and whatever they decide to do with him. I mean, I'm assuming he's fast tracked to the title at this point.
You mentioned the four guys, you know, that you kind of at 205, but the dark horse I was just thinking about is Phil Davis. Phil Davis has a win over Machida, beat Gustafsson.
He's a loss to Rashad Evans.
Has a loss to Rashad Evans, but he beat Gustafsson.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I think,
where would you put him?
I think Anthony Johnson's going to give him problems.
Yeah.
I really do.
Yeah.
I like Anthony Johnson, and I think that he's finally settled down and realized that he can't cut 60 pounds to 170 anymore, or even 40 pounds to 185. So he's found a nice home at light heavyweight, and I think he's going to be a problem. And I think if Phil Davis comes in and dismantles Anthony Johnson, then his name, yes, is right up there with Rashad, the Gustafsson and the Cormiers. Make a Phil Davis Cormier fight.
Yeah, I think that fight would be the best because Phil Davis has that card to play where it's like Gustafsson already had his shot. I've beat him.
Right.
Let me get in there.
Phil Davis also a long guy.
Yeah.
Be a problem.
Yeah.
Doesn't quite have the striking credentials that the two aforementioned guys do, but a very long guy nonetheless.
And he beat a former champion in Machida as well.
He's got some good wins.
Definitely. Have I ever told you speaking about Anthony Johnson and his cut weight, have I ever told you the story of when he cut weight and he was
for Titan? No.
And I had to drive him around.
Oh my God. Was he fighting it? Like, what was that fight at?
That fight
was at 205, wasn't it? 85.
85.
Okay.
And oh my God, he was struggling every second. And
he's so gigantic.
And he's in, like, so I drive a Honda Accord.
Yeah.
Not a spectacular car, but it works for me. Yeah. Gets you to point A to point B. And this massive man,
he's gigantic,
is laying in the back seat of my car just like, I got to get 5 more pounds off. Motherfucker, this is the worst. And Mario Sperry is sitting shotgun in my car, and he's like, you can do this. You can do this. And it was so surreal. Like, here's Mario Sperry and fucking Anthony Johnson in my little Honda Accord that I'm taking him to him at YMCA to cut the next 5 pounds off. It was so crazy. And Anthony Johnson, actually, really nice guy, even though he went through all that stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, people can be assholes when they're doing it. Yeah.
Yeah.
He was super cool to me the entire time, but yeah, that's my Anthony Johnson. Every time I think of him cutting weight, I think of my little Honda Accord.
He's probably, he probably struggles to get 205. I watched a YouTube video or something of him training, and it was like 6 weeks out for a fight at 170. He was like 223. I'm like,
Jesus.
What are you doing?
Yeah, what are you doing?
You can't do that. That's not a thing.
He's the guy, though, similar to DC, where it's like, you know, if he he probably feels most comfortable at heavyweight. When he fought Arlovski, that was heavyweight.
Yeah.
But then he's 5'10".
He's a 225-pound heavyweight.
Yeah.
You know.
I've always been a fan of cutting the heavyweight in half at 240. You do 241 to 265. Mm-hmm. Those are the Brock Lesnar, Alistair Overeem heavyweights.
Super heavyweights.
Right. And then you have, I was going to call them the cruiserweights.
Right, right.
You do the, you
205
know,
to 240,
right.
239.
Yeah, the Anthony Johnsons, even in his prime, Forrest Griffin would have been great at that weight.
Oh, yeah. And DC would be the champ of that weight class.
Yeah. And so I've always thought you should cut the heavyweight division in half just because of those guys that are, like, sucking down to get to 205.
Mm-hmm. And they're in-betweeners. They're caught in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't – they probably can't make – you know, like a Brendan Schaub is a guy who probably can't make 205.
No.
But could never – you know, he gets in there with Alistair Overeem or, you know, Travis Brown.
Yeah.
And it's like this is the two different weight classes.
Yeah.
You know, it's two different guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I've always thought, though, is separate those two. Hopefully that is something that they move to because of those. Now there's so many in-between guys.
Oh, yeah.
And it's a marketing thing. Hey, we're adding one more champion.
Right.
Here's one more division you can look at.
And they could get close to filling up a division with guys that are already on the roster.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean,
yeah.
There's guys who could move up from 205 who don't want to make that horrendous cut, and there's guys from heavyweight who are tired of being small heavyweights.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so there's definitely a pool of guys that could make up that division tomorrow.
Yeah, I think that's what they should do. But that's the reason why I'm doing a podcast and they're running the UFC.
Well, yeah, you know, it's all about perception. Exactly. I'm really excited about we're having a guest today. I don't think we haven't mentioned that.
We have Zach Cummings,
UFC welterweight.
Yeah, welterweight.
He's fighting in China next Saturday.
He's a huge guy too.
He's a really big guy.
Jesus,
he's a really nice guy.
Really nice
we,
guy.
We contacted him yesterday, and he's flying to China tonight. He's leaving at 6 to make the 18-hour trek, and he is nice enough to give us a phone interview.
18 hours?
and he's cutting weight.
God, yeah. He's such a fantastic guy. 18-hour flight.
He loses a day. So you lose a day of training and a day of cutting weight. He loses a full day.
I've been asking, do you cut weight on the plane?
Yeah, and you have to eat something. I mean, he's got to drink water on the plane. He's got to eat something. It's 18 hours. You know, he's going to be eating. He was talking about how he's at the point of his weight cut where he's cutting sodium out.
Mm-hmm.
Well, anything that he's going to eat on an airplane is going to have sodium in it to some degree. So it's, you know, he's trying to get, which I'm going to go ahead and answer all of the questions that we're going to ask him right now.
Yeah.
He's going to have to get his weight a little bit lower before he gets on the plane, you know, to kind of factor that in.
That's incredible.
We got to get off onto another topic that I wanted to do last week, but I forgot.
Okay.
I think we're calling Zach here after a while, pretty soon. But I think we need to tell the people, and of course I know your story, but how did you get into MMA? What led you?
You want to go first?
I can.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, thanks, man. You know I like to talk. My story is interesting. I grew up with Tony Sharkbait.
Tony Sharkbait.
That's
Gutierrez. That's his thing. Tony Sharkbait.
He's fighting on. You can catch him fighting on Titan. Was it 27?
Titan 27.
Titan 27. Mm-hmm. Next Friday. This coming Friday.
CBS Sports.
Or if you're a real fan, Memorial Hall, Kansas City, Kansas. You can get your tickets from Tony Sharkbait.
Yes, buy it from him.
But grew up with him, known him forever, and there was probably a year or two in high school where. Him and I weren't as close. We weren't hanging out, kind of hanging out with different groups of friends and stuff. But towards probably our junior year, we started communicating again and hanging out. And he called me one day, and I knew he had started training jiu-jitsu, MMA a little bit. Didn't know anything about it. Really hadn't talked to him about it. He called me one day. I was sitting in my basement, and we started talking. And I asked him about it, and he goes, "Yeah, man." You know, started telling me about it. He goes, "Have you ever watched an MMA fight?" And I'm like, no. You know, I didn't know.
What time frame is this?
2007, probably.
Okay.
I didn't know. I could name GSP and Anderson Silva just from watching SportsCenter, you know, and stuff like that. But I didn't know anything about the sport. He goes, "Are you by your computer?" I said, "I can be." He's like, and this was right after this fight happened. He goes, "I need you to watch a fight." And I'm like, okay. You know, tell me where I need to go. So he's like, "Type in Nick Diaz versus Takanori Gomi."
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, okay. So I type it in, load the video, and I watch Nick Diaz versus Takanori Gomi. And after that, I was texting him, and I was like,
209.
I'm like, tell me what other fight should I watch? You know, tell me some good. And he would send me, and of course they're all like these bang fest wars, mm-hmm. you know. And I started watching videos online. Well, then as him and I became closer again, I started going to K2O with him when he would go train, and mm-hmm. I would just sit on the bleachers and watch, and started, you know, I started falling in love with the sport, or at least getting an understanding and education on how the sport works. And then that kind of came into, I started watching the sport with him and going to local fights, and then he started fighting, and so I've kind of been around it for, you know, for some time now. Came close with all the people that he knows and his friends, and they became my friends, and it's been, I'm part of the community, Thomas. Yes. I'm part of the community.
You are.
I'm the guy.
You are the guy.
My name is synonymous.
With MMA with this, in Kansas with, City. Yes.
Yeah.
100%. 100%.
I wish it was.
So my story,
what's
actually
your story?
It came by accident. So as I mentioned, I'm a huge pro wrestling fan.
Right.
Pro wrestling's number one. It's, to me, the greatest entertainment for your dollar. You're okay. always going to get some type of spectacle when they put effort.
Certainly.
Now, that's a different story, putting effort and all that stuff.
You can hear that story in Spanish Announce Table.
Yes, on Training Topics.
TrainingTopicsNetwork.com.
So my story started with 1997.
Jesus Christ.
There's things called Blockbusters.
Oh, I was seven.
Okay, so these things called Blockbusters where it's similar to Netflix, okay. except you can go to the store.
It's the brick and mortar version
right.
of Netflix.
Yeah, okay. you can grab the physical copies
Holy smokes.
Of these DVDs, or at the time, VHSs.
Ooh, you had to have a VCR.
VCRs. And so I was going through the sports section, which I hate that pro wrestling's in the sports section because it's a TV show. Anyhow.
It's a sport.
It's... No. That's going off topic. So I see this VHS, and it says Ultimate Ken Shamrock. Ultimate Shamrock.
Okay.
And at the time, Ken Shamrock was the Intercontinental Champion mm-hmm. in WWF.
Right.
And so I'm thinking, awesome, I'm going to get this.
This is highlight tape.
Right. I'm going to get matches with him and The Rock, him and Stone Cold,
right.
all of that. Take it home, and it is him versus Pat Smith, him versus Royce Gracie. And the first fight I saw was that Pat Smith when he submitted him super
right.
quick. And I was like, son of a bitch, this is cool.
Right.
Like, this is really cool. And
he
they
just
showed,
made that guy concede.
Right. And then they were showing his training. And I've always been a fan of the, you know, the super athletes competing against each other, mm-hmm. and they were showing them, you know, doing pad work and doing conditioning and stuff, and I was like, this is fucking cool.
All right.
And even though the fight itself was very boring, but the draw that he had with Royce Gracie,
mm-hmm.
I just remember going, this is the coolest shit ever.
Right.
Ever. And so that VHS really sparked my interest. And so I'm like, okay, I really like this.
Right.
This is cool. And at the time, 1997, I'm probably sixth grade. So I'm starting to get into the fringe things because that makes me cool, right? You know what I mean?
The like fringe things.
You know
right.
what I mean? Not like yeah. the mainstream, all these
yeah.
like.
You were a hipster.
Right.
You were
yeah.
a sixth grade hipster.
Yeah, I was being a hipster. And MMA at that time was looked down upon so much. It was
oh,
coming
yeah.
right off that John McCain.
It's a human cockfighting.
Right, all that crap.
Right.
And I remember. There was a couple other VHSs, and I don't remember what they were. I think they're honestly early UFCs, maybe UFC mm-hmm. 3s or whatever.
Right.
And so I was getting those, and I was watching them. And then Donahue. Remember Donahue?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so Donahue had a show, and I remember this like it was yesterday. Donahue had a show about the UFC, and it was Ken Shamrock, Dan Severin, Royce Gracie, and then Tank Abbott.
Course.
Which, Jesus.
The Four Horsemen.
Right, exactly, the Four Horsemen. And they were talking about it, and then they were showing more clips of Dan Severin and Royce Gracie
right.
and all this stuff, and I was like, this is so fucking cool.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I have to know more about this. And really, it became just a, you know, going to school. Have you heard about this? No.
Right.
What is that, Hulk Hogan? No, it's kind of like that, but it's real. Well, whatever. And so
yeah.
I was just getting
sure
into
it. Is.
Yeah, I was getting more into it, and then... around 2003, I kind of took a little bit of
you took
break.
A break.
Yeah,
took a break.
Because it was so hard to find.
Yeah. And there was no outlet. There was no medium.
2003, which was the first season of Ultimate Fighter?
Yeah.
Is that correct?
2003, 2004. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That was, I heard about it, and it was on Spike TV, mm-hmm. and it was right after, it was on the same channel as Monday Night Raw.
So you just watch it after?
Well, they would run commercials during Monday Night Raw saying,
okay,
tune in at this time. And I was like, well, hell yeah.
Yeah.
And
you said, oh, hell yeah.
Oh, hell yeah. And I opened a beer and chugged it, you know. And the Ultimate Fighter then hooked me.
Right.
And then, you know, through the Ultimate Fighter, you know, you start going on their personal websites, and then you start to hear about websites like SureDog, and then you go to SureDog, and then it just snowballs. And
that,
then until
that was the big thing for me, finding out like the MMA websites.
Yeah.
And luckily I had Anthony to, you know, guide me in that, where it's like you can, it's a 24/7 update of what's going on in the world of MMA, you know, and it makes it better. It makes it easier to stay on the current topics. And I started going to watch the pay-per-views and stuff. And, but you know, watching, you said when you watched it, you thought it was so fucking awesome and badass. Like when I was watching the Nick Diaz.
And you're watching a good fight. I'm watching piece of shit. Yeah,
we got like, he gets, Gomi hits him with that hook and do punch.
Yeah.
And he doesn't get dropped. Nick Diaz just puts a hand down and just sets to his butt. Yeah. And Mauro Ranallo just goes insane.
Yeah.
You know, he's like, oh my God, and freaking out. And just, I don't know. I loved it. It was amazing.
Yeah. That was a great fight.
Oh, God. It was incredible. Great fight.
Pride, was it 33?
Yeah.
The Pride 33? Yeah. There were so many good fights
on there. His post-fight interview, he's wearing those sunglasses. And this is back when, like, MMA journalism was like a guy running up with like a cell phone camera and like asking questions. And Nick Diaz wearing these big sunglasses. And he's like, fuck, man, hit me with the fucking Hokkaido punch. Like, what the fuck is a Hokkaido punch? Hit him with a Hokkaido punch. He's like, give me the fucking Hokkaido punch.
Now, were you a fan on Pride 33? Were you a fan of the main event, Dan Henderson, Vanderlei Silva?
Yeah.
I mean, was that a fight that hooked you as well?
I didn't watch that fight till years later.
Okay.
I started going, hanging out with Anthony again, like I was saying, and he had all these, not all these, but he had acquired a nice DVD collection of, you know, like full fight cards and stuff, and we started watching these DVDs, and, you know, we'd watch from the the DVDs have the prelim battle all the way to main event, and we'd watch all these fights, and so I started like watching fights that had happened a couple years before, you know, 2 years after. I'm like, oh my God, you know, Dan Henderson fought Vanderlei Silva. Like what? You know, like just being a newbie to the game. But yeah, that's how I got into MMA. And that's how I kind of started and had to work my way backwards to get the history and to see all the fights,
right,
only to, you know, then move forward and get back on the current train.
Yeah. Man, there was a time period where I was almost Matt Water superfan-esque,
yeah,
where I could tell you the stats of every single fighter.
Yeah.
But that was at the time period, too, when UFC did one fight a month.
Yeah.
And there was, you know, 20 fighters in each division.
Now you got one every week.
Yeah, you got one every week, and God damn, it's so hard to keep up on. And then you have the local fights, which I became such a fan. How did you get involved with the local fights?
Anthony. I went to Whiskey Tango with him a couple times when Krause and those guys were still amateurs getting ready to turn pro. And then when Anthony had his first fight in May of 2009 in Springfield, Zach Cummings was the main event on that card, who we'll talk to actually pretty shortly.
Yeah, here in a couple minutes.
That's how I got on going to the local shows and kind of became buddies with Anthony's buddies that he trained with. I love the regional circuit.
Mm-hmm.
I do.
I do too. I remember the first fight I went to was at the Adams Mark Hotel, right across from the stadiums.
Yep.
And I had always had this perception of, all right, these fighters are badass, and I can get a little lippy, right?
You get a little lippy.
Yeah, I get a little, hey,
Miss Lippy,
fuck you guy over there.
Right.
Well,
right.
I showed up and I'm like, I ain't saying shit.
Yeah. I don't want to make eye contact with these guys.
Because I went by myself.
Right.
I didn't have, like,
you didn't have an entourage.
No, no one else was really into the sport. I had my friend Matt, but Matt at the time just couldn't go. And so I was like, I'm just going to go. I want to see this in person.
Yeah. Why not?
And I remember there was like, I want to say maybe 10 folding chairs that fell all at one time, and it sounded like a gunshot.
You thought you got shot?
I freaked the fuck out.
I've been hit.
I dove to the ground.
Oh, my God.
I looked around. I was so scared. And then
you were certain you're bleeding?
Oh, yeah.
I know I'm bleeding.
Well, then I went to another fight. My second fight was at the old Bannister Mall.
Jesus.
And that was literally legitimately.
You probably did get shot.
Yeah, that one I probably was stabbed at least. Yeah. And and then I just started going to, like, I just started hearing about more of them. And then you betcha. When then I, man, that was pretty
loud.
Really
loud.
We're in a soundproof studio. Jesus. This guy's yelling through the...
I got screamed.
But the way I became really involved in the, you know, Kansas City fight scene like you is when I did the fight show live on 810.
Yeah.
And we got the sponsorship.
When did you
from,
start that?
We started 2010.
Okay.
January of 2010. Yeah. Because then by December, Joe Kelly with Titan Fighting was our sponsor.
Mm-hmm.
And when he got the Access TV deal, he's like, hey, you guys, you know all these people in media just by, you know, research and all that stuff.
Right.
Would you set up interviews for the guys? Titan. And I was like, sure, yeah, yeah. Why not? And then his guy that was doing backstage, was he moved, and he's like, hey.
That's how you got linked up with Titan.
Yeah, he's like, hey, can you do backstage?
Have you mentioned that you work in the industry?
Oh, I guess have I don't. Yeah, I guess to the people who don't know me that well, yeah. I just figured, you know, we have
people that are listening probably do know, but just in case we have the new listeners.
Yeah. So I work for Titan Fighting Championships. I am the coordinator, mm-hmm. live event coordinator is what Joe Kelly gave me the term of. And basically, everyone always asks, like, what does that mean? Basically, Joe Kelly makes the show happen. He gets mm-hmm. the date, he gets the venue. Joe Wooster gets all the fighters. Now let me say that again. Joe Wooster gets all the fighters. If I get one more, can you get me on a Titan card?
I'm going
to lose it.
Right.
But Joe Wooster,
matchmaker extraordinaire,
does the matchmaking, has the best fights in the Midwest, bar none. And then the night of the event, I make sure it all runs.
Right.
So I make sure that the fighters show up on time. I make sure they have gloves, tape, gauze, mouthpiece, cup, blood work, all of that stuff. And so
you make sure the event runs smoothly.
Right. Yeah, and God, it's the best thing in the world.
Yeah.
I tell you what, that, like.
And you know what? You do a damn good job.
I appreciate it.
I've heard nothing but good things. And not only are people who are affiliated with the shows and the scene recognizing it, you're getting other gigs throughout the Midwest with other shows.
Yeah.
So obviously what you're doing, you're doing well.
Yeah. I feel like I am. But it goes back to that fear of the fighters, because I don't train. Yeah. I tried training a little bit. For those who know me.
You don't train yet.
I don't like to move a lot. So,
well, you know, that's part of it.
So when I go, I like to sit on the bleachers.
Yeah.
You know, people get that itch to go on the mat. Nah.
That's how all people who train started
right.
was sitting on the bleachers. So it's only a matter of time.
Maybe it is a matter of time, but it goes back to those fighters, and they put in all of this work, and son of a bitch, if I'm going to be the reason.
You're going to fuck it up.
I'm going to fuck it up. So no way will I let anything, you know, slip through the cracks.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, that's how I got into the MMA scene. I like that. Now, let me ask you a question.
Okay.
Gomi and Nick Diaz, is that why Nick Diaz... To me, he's your favorite fighter, correct?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is that why? Is it goes back to that first fight?
Yeah, and I'll give credit to Anthony. He was he was a pretty big Nick Diaz fan. And then when season 5 of The Ultimate Fighter, when Nate was on it, we watched that season, and then Anthony bought the DVD, and we watched it all the time because of how funny Nate was in the house. So we became real big fans of the Diaz brothers and just their style. I mean, they had the crazy... You know, the crazy style, even before the crazy style was cool, you know, mm-hmm. coming in, standing up, trying to finish fights, but also being ridiculous grapplers, you know, so they were always really fun to watch. And I remember, fast forwarding a bunch of years, but we were watching, James Krause and I were watching Nate Diaz versus Cerrone,
mm-hmm.
and just watching him work Cerrone and just the flipping him off before the round and you know, just people. I love that people hate Nick and Nate Diaz because of how they are and how they act. And it's like, guys, come on. You know, if that's not entertaining to you, you know, if you don't want to watch that, then that's okay. That's your prerogative. But I do. That is entertaining to me.
I find that entertaining. And this is a thing that I don't. So I'm a Diaz fan, mm-hmm. but then I'm also not.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't like at a press conference when Nick Diaz flips off Frank Shamrock. Jesus Christ, you guys are wearing street clothes. There's security.
See, I love that.
Why do it?
I loved it.
Now, for example, when Nate Diaz is flipping off Cerrone during the fight, well, Cerrone has his chance to actually hit him.
Yeah.
So I love it. If you're going to, like, taunt during the fight when the guy actually has the opportunity to do something about it, amazing. I'm a fan.
Or when Ben Henderson's going for a heel hook and they're setting up facing each other and yeah. he just has his middle finger in his
just
face.
Just flipping them off, yeah. I love that because that's the end combat. If you don't like it, shut it up.
Do you think that – I feel like you would like that, though.
No, I
am. Very pro wrestling.
And that's why I love it. I love the in the fight flipping
off. I see what you're saying.
It's the press conference stuff. Shut up. Is he gonna punch you at the press conference? No. Then
he
stop
might.
Flipping him off.
You know, he did get into a physical no, not Nick Diaz. With Joe Riggs.
Yeah, I'm not talking about Nick Diaz. I know that. I'm talking about the other guy. Yeah. I mean, is he really going to do something? No.
The Diaz brothers, I read an article. We need to call Zach Cummings here in a little bit.
Yes.
But actually, it's just 11. He'd be okay.
But I'm just waking up.
Yeah. I read an article. This was before Nate Diaz and Cerrone fought. Cerrone did an interview with Sherdog, and he said that he was in Vegas for some fights, and he wasn't fighting, and he got on pressed an elevator button at Mandalay Bay, and the elevator door opened, and it was Nick and Nate Diaz standing there. And so he, like, walked in the elevator, and he said, literally, Nick and Nate Diaz, he goes, we went up to, like, the 13th or 14th floor. He was like, Nick and Nate Diaz didn't say a word, just stared at me. He goes, I've never thought I was going to have to get into a fight in an elevator before, my own business. Right. And he goes, I got off the 13th floor and felt so uncomfortable because they didn't talk. They were just staring at me. You know, and it's like people think that this is some persona to make money and be famous.
No,
and
it's
like,
legit.
This is these guys. This is what they do.
Yeah. And that's why I do like them. I just wish they'd tone down the press conference stuff.
Yeah.
Come on. We all know that this is there to sell fights. And maybe that's what they're doing it for.
Right.
More power to them.
Yeah.
I just like more of the in the fight. Hey, you have the opportunity to shut them up? Go do it.
Certainly, yeah.
Yeah,
I agree.
Yeah.
I tend to agree.
Yeah. So, well, you want to give old Zach Cummings a call?
Let's call Zach Cummings. I hope he answers. I just love talking to him so much. Does he have a ring back?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
That's awesome.
That's disgusting.
All right, let me just get a test.
What do you have going on today?
Oh, you know, just a little bit of everything.
There we go. All right, we're good to go. Let's
get right into it.
Let's get right into it.
What are you doing this weekend? What's going on in your life this weekend?
This weekend I got this little trip I'm taking, you know, all the way to just across the pond to China.
Ooh, wow. China. What are you doing over there?
Yeah, I'm going to beat up some Brazilian guy.
Nice. You're fighting was this the Tough China finale?
It is, I believe.
Okay, so you're fighting on the Tough China finale and you're fighting Alberto Mina?
Oh, that's correct.
Wow, that's exciting, man. I'm really excited for you. And he is Brazilian, that's correct.
So what time will you be fighting? Like, it's our time, so that people can see.
I still have no clue. I think it's like 5:30 in the morning.
Yeah, I think
around
I read
that time.
So
but
why
I'm
do you,
not.
Why do you got to be so selfish fighting at 5:30 in the morning? Like, we don't want to wake up that early.
And you got to buy UFC Fight Pass.
And you got to get UFC Fight Pass. Zach, really, did you consider us in this decision? I mean, really.
I did. I really did. But they were like, hey, you're doing this. And I was like, okay. Yeah, that sounds
good.
About right.
I'll be there. So is this your second fight at welterweight ever? Did you have any welterweight fights prior to becoming a UFC welterweight?
I welterweight in like over 10 or 170 in over 10 years. So
you never had a fight at welterweight?
Nope, never had a fight.
So this is your second welterweight fight. That's good. You're a gigantic welterweight.
You are.
That's a fact.
So tell me about this flight. What are you going to do on this flight? That's what we were talking about this a little bit earlier. It's an 18-hour flight. And you've still got to cut weight. What the hell are you going to do?
Yeah, what's your plan?
Yeah, what's your plan to get to China?
I'm going to sit on a plane.
Okay, so you're not driving.
Okay, so you're not.
I was going to ask. But I'm going to keep my water loading going on. So I'm trying to get 2 gallons of water in today before I leave.
Jesus.
And then I'm going to just slam as much water as possible as I can on the plane. And then hopefully I have to get up to the bathroom a lot. I'll get my exercise walking to the bathroom and back.
There you go.
And that's pretty much the plan. Maybe I might do some bear crawls, you know.
Are you going to put a sauna suit on the plane?
Debated it.
Are you and Krause going to do some airplane grappling?
Maybe. You know, might do a... head up to the cockpit, maybe do some pad work. And
head up to the cockpit.
Yep.
He said, head up to the cockpit. Anyway.
I like the idea of you doing bear crawls to the bathroom.
Yeah. you're too big for that. So the first time I ever heard about Zach Cummings was, I want to say 2009, he fought a young gentleman named Terry Martin.
Mm-hmm. Heard of him.
He beat Terry Martin. That was the first time I had ever heard of him. And he was living and training in Springfield at the time. Is that correct, Zach?
That's correct.
So that wasn't too far away, but there. Correct me if I'm wrong, Zach, and I think this is true. There was a little bit of a, I guess rivalry is the best word, kind of between Springfield and Kansas City from an MMA standpoint. Obviously, we're all friends now, but wasn't there a little bit of kind of a unspoken, kind of like even a Springfield Fight Club kind of grindhouse?
Oh, I definitely think so.
Rivalry type thing. Is that true?
I think it was. I mean, there's basically, I thought some of the best guys in the state was at my, you know, at
right.
my school
which
or down at
was true.
Yeah, and then and also at Grindhouse, St. Louis, kind of they had a couple decent guys, but kind of stayed out of the picture.
Right.
But it seemed like a lot of the shows that we had either up here or up in Kansas City or down in Springfield was kind of the larger battles were, you know, more between Springfield Fight Club and Grindhouse
right.
guys.
I mean, Michael Johnson fought Krause, also fought Eric Marriott, Andrew Whitney,
Jesse Zeigen,
you know, yeah. those guys all fought in our
yeah, Michael
all.
Also fought Darrow.
True. Michael, yeah, ouch.
And
he fought
a lot of them.
Yeah, he's fought the whole Grindhouse
he's
team
pretty
almost.
Much fought, he's pretty much fought all of Grindhouse.
What got you up
they're
to
all
Kansas?
Dodging me.
Yeah. They were ducking you.
What got you up to Kansas City? I never heard of that story. What got you from Springfield up here to Kansas City?
My wife, actually. I pretty much got engaged, and she took a residency up in Topeka, Kansas. So, since, you know, her job is a little more important than mine at the time, well, even now, I went ahead and moved up here. We lived in Lawrence, and of course, obviously, I knew about Grindhouse from our little epic battles between our gyms, so I decided I was going to...
It was a good fit.
...train there, and I drove from Lawrence all the way to Lee Summit every day.
I remember when you were doing that.
Yep, and then she ended up taking a job in Excelsior Springs, so we stayed up in Kansas City, and which we're actually both very happy about. So
wait a minute, yeah. you drove from Lawrence to Lee Summit. How many times a week did you do that?
I mean, sometimes
every day.
You know, I mean, every day pretty much, and then sometimes twice a day. If I had a fight coming up, it was twice a day, morning and evening. And
which guys, it's like a 50-minute drive. I mean.
Every day?
Once you settle down.
That's
it's
insane.
A 50-minute drive.
No.
Here's an interesting fact. When Anthony Sharkbait Gutierrez
Tony Sharkbait
made his MMA debut, his first amateur fight, I believe Zach Cummings was the main event. He fought Dominic Brown in Springfield, it was a one-sided beating.
The Casey Bad Boy.
And he was 9. He fought Dominic Brown, who was 9-18 at the time. And then after Zach won, he announced that he was taking his talents to Strikeforce. So that was cool. I got to watch you do that.
Yeah.
And so he's
good
like,
times.
He announced he was going to Strikeforce. Everyone went crazy. I said, look at this guy. Fucking Zach Cummings over here trying to go to Strikeforce.
Right.
But here's I know we got to get you off the phone. You got stuff to do, but talk a little bit about real quick. And I hate this question, but I'm gonna ask it anyway. You were a contestant on The Ultimate Fighter. Was that Tough 17?
Mm-hmm. That was Tough 17.
Okay, so you were on Tough 17, and you had a little bit different path post Tough 17. You were scheduled to fight on the finale, had an injury. And they ended up giving you a fight anyway, which was your debut. Do you think that was better for you in terms of, you know, you didn't fight, ended up fighting a guy who was also on the show. You fought Benny Alloway, got a Darce win, you know, everything went well, it was great. Do you think that it was better for you not being part of the finale and kind of branching off from the regular path of a Tough alumni?
Yeah, it's a tough question. It's it was kind of a mixed feeling type thing because right. I really
wanted to fight in the finale.
Yeah, I really felt like I wanted to be a part of the show and everything.
Right.
And I did. I love Clint. You know, I was
certainly
I was fight Clint Hester, and I really like Clint. But I thought it was a great matchup for me. He's a very athletic, strong guy who's a solid striker. But I really thought that it was going to go my way and. Kind of like the Alloway fight of being able to get him to the ground and submit him from there. Mm-hmm. So I really liked the matchup. It wasn't a difference between Alloway and Clint. Mm-hmm. It was much beastly over man. but I think it kind of like fed the fire a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
I by having to sit there on the outside and like front row and watch the whole thing kind of go by and knowing I should have been a part of it.
Right.
It really kind of got to me. And then, of course, it kind of gave me a little extra time to make that drop to welterweight that I've been talking about for years but never thought it'd actually come true. So, I mean, I really do think it turned out to be the best thing for me because it kind of got me out of that tough type category, mm-hmm. I guess. And, but
because that's a real thing. It's a real thing.
But, it was really hard to watch though and everything. But I think it kind of, fed the fire. You know, it's kind of like maybe want a little bit more and really want to prove myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
because that was the first fight I've ever had to back out of in my life. Right. Yeah, because of injury, and then that same year I had another one later on the year, which really upset me. But
well, it sounds like you're getting you're back on track.
Yeah, you're back on track.
Yeah, no more injuries.
No more injuries ever.
I'm done.
That is awesome.
I'm done.
Hey, so before we let you go, kind of give us the recap. You're fighting in China. Give us the whole spiel so that we know how to watch and all that fun stuff.
All right, I will be fighting in Macau, China on March 1st. And it will be the very first event where the whole event is on Fight Pass, the brand new Fight Pass. I would like to call it the Netflix for UFC.
There you go. I like that.
You gotta pay a little $9.90 something subscription, and you can watch it.
We gotta wake up
on any of your
first.
Mobile devices or TV, I believe. So,
wow.
And I'm fighting Alberto Mina. He's 10-0, solid guy. So I'm gonna go out there and show him what a upper level competitor looks like.
That's right. What one of those big welterweight looks like.
Yeah.
All right. Last question. This is the most serious question that we've asked you so far. Who has a better MMA beard, Derek Ripley or Tim Elliott, when he has a beard?
Oh.
Now I'm not talking. You can't go length. It can't be length. I'm talking overall.
Oh, you're actually talking about the beard. I thought you meant like when you hit him.
Oh no. I'm talking
beard.
Real
yeah,
beard.
I know what he meant.
I know. Yeah, I knew you knew what I meant.
Dude, I mean that's top two up there.
Those are
very,
two
very
good.
They're completely opposite. You know, I mean, Ripley's got that like sexiness of the gray in there also.
Salt and pepper,
and very clean and crisp and. Elliot just has the crazy wild man beard.
Right.
It's two categories themselves. It's completely two different beards.
Tim has the type of beard that you might find a wood chip in. and he wouldn't know it.
Yeah, or a whole tree.
Yeah, there you go. Well, I won't make you answer that question because you're right, it is a tough one. But good luck.
Good luck.
Good luck in your travels, first and foremost. And definitely good luck in your fight. I know you're not going to need it. And bring home a win.
Awesome, guys. Thank you.
All right, man. Thanks for coming on.
Appreciate it.
All right,
thanks.
Bye.
All right.
Love that guy. That guy's one of my favorites. That is a guy who I have never seen not be smiling. He's in a good mood all the time.
Yeah, That is the exact thing I was going to say. There's honestly but he's always like at a good happy too.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, there's usual people that are just one mood, but it's like that Fedor where it's like you're happier and it's just stone face. No, he's just happy
all the time.
But he doesn't get too crazy happy like where it's like, "Okay, guy, calm down."
He's an even keel happy guy.
Even keel happy guy. Yeah, and he's a beast, god.
Yeah.
Damn, he's a beast.
I think he's going to dominate this fight, and I think he's on the cusp of becoming a household name at 170, and we'll start getting some bigger name guys, and he'll be able to display the skill set that we all know he has, and he's just waiting to have his coming out party and let the world know that he's here.
And like you said, he's such a big welterweight, and he has such good grappling. I think that's a dangerous one too. It's like, okay, I'm on top of you. I know what I'm doing, and now I'm probably 20 pounds heavier than you.
People talk about and he's a phenomenal grappler, and he's a great wrestler, but a lot of people don't know that he hits like a Mack truck.
He looks like it.
He hit me in the throat one time, and I sounded like Gilbert Gottfried for a week.
Now, you guys were sparring, or was this just you got out of line?
I think we were sparring.
Okay.
I hope we were sparring. I hope he didn't hit me for no reason. But, yeah, he hits hard.
Now, I want to ask you a question you asked him.
Yes.
Okay, the beard question. You got to answer this. If you're going to propose it, who does have the better beard?
I think I would. Here's the thing. Here's my thing with beards. Ripley has had a beard since since I've known him,
mm-hmm.
or some sort of growth. And what he has is he has a full, well manicured. It looks good. It, like Zach said, it's got a great amount of salt and pepper. Mm-hmm. Goes right with his hair. You know, it's distinguished.
Definitely.
He looks classy. He could wear it to a dinner party, and no one would, you know, no one would say blink an eye. I think it's what some is a saying that people say. Tim, on the other hand, his beard looks like he just woke up in the middle of the forest. And just hit something with an axe, which I like. It looks good on him. You know, it goes with his hair as well. You know, he's got the lumberjack look down. If I had to pick who has the better beard, I'm probably going to go with Old Reliable, which is Derek Ripley.
Oh, I'm going Tim Elliott.
Are you?
Tim Elliott.
Because Tim, I mean, I don't, you know, I've only known Tim for a handful of years now, but, you know, when he grows the beard, it's an event.
That's why I like it.
Ripley is, he has a beard because it's a Tuesday.
Right.
And he always has.
Ripley could go to a downtown nice established restaurant with that beard and be great, right? Hey, look at that man.
Right.
He looks like he can kick your ass, and he's a good looking guy, right? Tim Elliott walks in, you're like, son of a bitch, look at this guy.
Yeah.
And he just like, yep, I'm here to party.
Yeah.
And so I want that beard because I like that just reputation that it has that comes along with it.
It does. And it his beard, Tim's beard makes sense.
Yeah.
If you know him, it makes sense.
Well, his fighting style. It makes sense even for his fighting style, even if you don't know him.
He's his nickname in the gym, and I wish he would adapt it to his fighting or his fight name, but it's nothing nice. Mm-hmm. Everything about him is just rough.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if he
does he have a nickname or is it just Tim Elliott?
Just goes Tim Elliott with it. But you know, he grappling hurts. Grappling him hurts.
Mm-hmm.
Sparring him hurts. He's got hard bones. He's got a hard head. You know, his beard just it goes along with his persona and the way that he fights. And it makes sense, but it's the same with Ripley. You know, the professor. It's distinguished.
Mm-hmm.
His beard is distinguished, and then you get to a point where you know you realize that you just spent the last 10 minutes of your podcast talking about other guys' beards.
It's fine.
You know,
it's fine.
And that's you know I got salsa on my shirt. It's it's just
a Sunday morning.
It's second podcast.
Yeah, why
problems.
Not?
Second podcast probs.
I'm looking up the card for this fight pass in China. The main event, Dong Young Kim versus John Hathaway. That should be pretty good, right?
I like that fight. It's a great fight.
John Hathaway only has one loss.
Dude, he's the most underrated guy under contract in the UFC, in my opinion.
That's insane. I didn't realize. It feels he's a king. It feels like because of this, where he's at in that pecking order, he would have more losses. I guess I never realized he only had one. It's to Mike Pyle, right? Right, Mike Pyle beat him.
Sure.
Wasn't that what happened?
Sure. I don't know. You're the one with the phone.
Yeah, but
that sounds right.
Yeah.
Maybe so. He had. That guy keeps walking by.
Yep, lost Mike Pyle.
Okay. He had a really long layoff for a while there. And I think that's maybe why people think fell out of relevancy
because
he didn't fight there for a while. This is his first fight, you know, in a minute, I think.
Yeah.
I want to say so.
Yeah. Out of sight, out of mind kind of thing.
He's a killer.
Yeah.
He's a killer.
Who you got in that one? Are you taking Stun Gun or are you taking Hathaway?
That's a tough fight. I'm going to take Stun Gun, but it wouldn't surprise me if Hathaway comes in and knocks him out.
So my Hathaway story is I went to UFC 116, Rampage versus Rashad, right? Hathaway was fighting Diego Sanchez.
Mm-hmm.
And Hathaway was like a minus 300. And if you're not familiar with betting lines, it's based off a $100 bet. So if you place $100, if he's plus 300, you get your $100 back plus 300.
Right.
If he's a minus 300, you have to bet $300 just to get your $100 back. Right. And I believe he was around like a plus 300. And I was like,
it's crazy that he was a favorite in that fight.
No, he was the underdog. I'm sorry. He was the underdog.
He was plus 300.
Yeah, he was plus 300. Okay. I said that incorrectly.
Okay.
Yeah. Hathaway was the favorite. No, underdog. Jesus. I don't know.
Whatever. You were there.
I was there.
You lived it.
It was Vegas. Yeah. You know, there's a lot of hazy.
It was Vegas.
There's a lot of hazy days. Anyhow, he was such a big underdog that I should have bet money on it. And I remember I spoke with Ariel Helwani at the UFC Expo. I was like, who you got tonight? And I was speaking about Rampage and Rashad, and he goes, Hathaway. And I was like, that's a great fucking answer. And I was like, I
Thanks,
should bet.
Ariel.
And I didn't do it. And now I will never bet against John Hathaway.
You'll never get that $300.
I never will get that $300.
You fucked up.
Yeah. Well, I fucked the story up, too, saying Jesus. Underdog.
And he was the underdog. Well, he was the overdog. Well, he was the underdog. Yeah. Oh, Jesus Christ.
My mind doesn't work very well. You're going to learn that through these episodes.
My brain hurts.
My brain works very slow and sometimes in different directions.
And when we're podcasting in the morning, which we don't normally do in this show's history, in this show's two-episode history, we don't normally do that.
Our consistency with great quality consists of the afternoon. Did you like how I used that twice? Consistency and consist. I like that.
It seems a little redundant.
Yes, I like that. That's why I did it.
I liked it.
So, that was pretty good. I like that. How'd you think the interview went with using the phone?
I liked it. I mean, it was, you know, I didn't have expectations really coming in, and it was good.
I assumed with this technology, because we had microphone issues, and I'm still having microphone issues right now, I figured it would have got dropped. Yeah. I figured it would be like, hey, Zach, how are you doing?
Yeah.
All right, well, we'll get him back.
Yeah. That was our Zach Cummings interview. He said hello.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like you said, he's cutting.
He's busy.
Yeah.
He's too busy for the show.
2 gallons of water.
Can you imagine that?
Before, what time is his flight? Like 5 or something like that, he said?
His flight is at 6.
6, yeah. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, I don't think I've drank 2 gallons of water cumulative in my life, let alone in one day. Man, I think it went really well.
I think it did, too.
I'm actually happy with it.
What are we going to do next week, Turner? What do you got planned?
Or
are we just flying by the seat of our pants? I like that.
Oh, wow. It's going to be Sunday. I'd like to get I'd like to see if we can get Tim Elliott. He has a fight coming up.
He does.
Big one.
That's a huge fight.
I'd like to see if we can. First of all, we're going to need to carve out about 45 minutes to interview him, because there's a million things that I want to ask him, and there's a million stories that I want him to tell, because he's hilarious.
Do you think this is – because obviously we're a Grindhouse favorited
show. We're biased.
We're biased. Now, that's nothing against HD. I love LC Davis. I love Jason High. But
it's our friends. These are our friends.
Yeah, these are our friends.
Our closer friends, I guess.
But would you say that the Tim Elliott Joseph Benavidez fight is the most high profile fight for a Grindhouse fighter?
I would think so. Yeah.
I mean, because he wins this, don't you think he's at least one more fight and then a title?
He moves. He becomes a top 5. He becomes a top 4. Maybe even top 3 flyweight if he wins this fight. Joseph Benavidez is number 2, maybe number 3. You know, he's obviously fought DJ twice and lost both times, but if Tim Elliott beats Joe B, he solidifies how good we all know he is.
I mean, he's, you know, amazing.
What I mean? That dude's incredible, and we should get him on the show next week. We'll see what we can do. What we should do is I'll just go, hey, Tim, we're going to have you on here for about 45 minutes. We just want you to talk. And no topics. Just start talking, and I'll let you know when you need to stop. And it'd probably be the greatest show that we ever did.
Oh, easily.
Him, I want to get him on. I want to get Eric Marriott on. We're going to have to get James Krause on when he gets back in. He's going to China with Zach Cummings.
Yeah, he's cornering him, right?
So he might have read on Facebook that he might have some fight news coming up. So we're going to have him on to talk about that when he gets back on U.S. soil.
A lot of fighters staying active around Kansas City.
Kansas City's got some fights scheduled right now.
And since you had mentioned Eric Marriott, he's fighting on the Titan card on Friday, and we won't do another show until after that card. I want your prediction. Grigel, Ricci, who you got?
Ricci.
How?
Just a better fighter. Outworks him, better everywhere, except for him on the ground.
That's where I think the fight might be interesting, because Grigel's one of those guys where he's obviously great on the ground, but he doesn't like to do it, and I don't understand that.
I've never been blown away. The only thing, I mean, obviously, George Grigel's a fantastic grappler and a great fighter nonetheless, but I've never been blown away by a George Grigel fight. Other than his ridiculous chin and heart, taking beatings on the feet.
Yeah, And he almost has that Diego Sanchez Clay Guida where it's like, this guy is so fucking tough, yeah. And he's taking every punch and just standing there.
He's an animal, and I'm not a big Mike Ricci fan either. I probably shouldn't say that, but
no, you can.
Since we're also friends with Titan Fighting Championships, but I'm not a big Mike Ricci fan. That's probably the fight that I'm least excited for on the main card, to be honest.
I would agree.
I think that obviously
now we're biased. Both, you know,
obviously we're excited for Anthony's fight, but
Marriott.
Yeah, and Marriott. I'm excited for the Kevin Kroom Goldsby fight. I think watching Kevin Kroom fight is something everyone should get the opportunity to do. It's very fun, mm-hmm. You know, I think that the Matt Riddle fight, and I don't know much about who he's fighting, other than I know that he's very good, but I think Matt Riddle, I like watching Matt Riddle fight, even though people probably would say that he's boring.
No way. He has one of the best knockouts. I know. I completely agree, but he has one of the best knockouts ever.
Yeah.
When he knocked out that one guy on The Ultimate Fighter, and the guy was like,
Matt Riddle's a gangster, and I think he's going to rejuvenate his career by getting away from the UFC and the drama that he went through and mm-hmm. getting with a good organization like Titan Fighting Championships.
Yeah, I'm just excited for the event for two reasons. One, for me, going back to kind of how our history and the mm-hmm. sport is, it feels like Memorial Hall. Now, I will say this.
Historic Memorial Hall.
The historic Memorial Hall. Is it the best place for a fight? Probably not. But it feels like home. Get what I'm saying? Like,
I do.
There's so much fight history. Well, there's so much history in general. Yeah. But there's so much fight history there that it's just like, this is where any big-time fight should happen.
Mm-hmm.
Even if Sprint Center or whatever could do it, I feel like, man, it'd be great if it was at Memorial Hall.
It's a great venue. There's not a bad seat in the house.
Literally.
Really, there's not. And, you know, Joe Kelly and Thomas McCullough and guys like that have really got down the the science behind throwing a quality fight show and
everything. Joe Wooster.
Joe Wooster, of course, yeah. Matchmaker extraordinaire. Mm-hmm. But you know, the show always runs smoothly. It's always quality fights, and you know, if you're looking to go watch a live MMA show in Kansas City, and you want to see some of the best guys outside of the UFC compete, I think February 28th at Memorial Hall is where you need to be at.
It's going to be fun. Although, saying all of that about Memorial Hall, as running the fighters, that's what I call it, backstage, making sure they get to the cage, that is a son of a bitch. Because down in the basement,
it's a quarter mile
just to get these guys just to the cage.
You better bring a track suit.
Oh, yeah. I'll be cutting weight that day. Yeah.
There you go. Yeah, I'm excited to be back in Memorial. I haven't been there for a while, mm-hmm. At least to watch a Titan show. So I'm excited to get back there, excited for Anthony to fight and see some of my friends. And it's going to be good. You guys, if you're on the fence, first of all, you can watch it on CBS Sports.
Right.
I think that needs to be noted first and foremost. Mm-hmm. I think we talked last week about the broadcast starting at 10:30. Is that what you said?
10:30 Eastern. Yeah. 10:30.
It's tape delayed, so you can watch all the main card fights.
Mm-hmm.
But more importantly, you know, don't be an asshole. Buy a ticket.
Yeah, if you're in the area and you're not a guy that works overnights,
yeah,
show up.
Come down, buy a ticket from one of my friends, Anthony Gutierrez or Eric Marriott, and come watch quality MMA and help the sport grow.
Definitely. Yeah, they're going to do more shows here if more people show up.
Yeah, that's how this works.
That's how a business works.
Yeah.
So, all right, well, let's get out of here.
Let's get out of here. Good show.
That was.
I liked it.
Look at this. Oh, there it is.
Ooh.
See, now you hear it.
Yeah, now
last
hear
week
it.
You didn't have the headphones.
I know.
Now you do.
You can hear the outro.
Yes. All right, well, as always, you can hear this episode on trainingtopicsnetwork.com. Also, if you'd like to participate, send us an email.
Please, email us next week.
thesplitdecision@yahoo.com.
Yes, please.
And we'll be back next week.
Let's get our views up, guys.
Yes.